I have two readings for you today. The first is from the Gospel of Matthew. The second is from a book that's related to what we'll be talking about today. From the Gospel of Matthew, I'll be reading from chapter 25, verses 42 through 45. I'm reading from the English Standard Version, and this is probably one that you're all familiar with. "For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they also will answer, saying, "Lord, when did he see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to you?" Then he will answer to them, saying, "Truly, I say to you, as you did not do it unto one of the least of these, so too you did not do it unto me." May we add meaning and understanding to the reading of these words. My second reading is going to come from Naomi Klein, and it's from her book entitled, "This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate," where she says, "We are trapped within an economic system that has it backwards. It behaves as if there is no end to what is actually finite, clean water, fossil fuels, the atmosphere to absorb those emissions, while insisting that there are strict and immovable limits to what is actually quite flexible, the financial resources that human institutions manufacture." And with that, we're going to take a little breather and enjoy some amazing music from Dave Fox. Dave, will you join us and play a song?
I don't know how I can follow that.
We need you following that thought to give us some breath.
This is called, hello everybody. This is called "Around We All Go." I wrote it during the pandemic, during the isolation part of the pandemic. Just referring to the fact that things keep going on. The world keeps turning. It hasn't stopped yet. Thank you. much.
For those who aren't familiar, Dave, we're very lucky to have him here. You can find out more about Dave online at Dave Fox Music. That has a K at the end, like music. I think it's very clever. I like it. I encourage you to go find out more there. Also, again, those that are watching online, please let us know where you're watching from and leave any messages that you might have. So I got a funny story, not a funny story, it's a story, about this morning, just to see if it made a difference, and I posted a quote from this message online, just letting folks know that it will be broadcast on 11/7, and it took less than 20 minutes for a very anti-progressive person to post under it, prepare for the BS. He said it very differently. So just know that at least one person already has submitted their commentary on this and was not particularly pleased with where I went with this. My message today is entitled, U.S. Capitalism is Anti-Christian. There is an aberrant and oxymoronic relationship. There's a lot and well in the United States. And it should have never been, it turns out. It is a putrid and heartless combination that's been laying out the suffering for a while now. It's been betraying the intention of the true American dream and stomping on those who struggle the most along the way. It's become so much the water that we swim in, few bother to notice, few bother to name it, few bother to condemn it. Capitalism and Christianity. The Christian nationalism some politicians are now publicly proclaiming is actually partly built from and plays into the further promotion of this system that adds suffering to the lives of the least of these while heavily favoring those who already have so much. There's nothing Christian about that. For that matter, there is nothing but most of the world's religions about that. And Kevin Cruz's One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America, he presents a carefully laid out history of Christianity's participation in the promotion of capitalism in the U.S. Most of us don't really know that history. He argues that Christianity's Puritan place for work and thrift played strongly in support of a laissez-faire economics where the way that hard work was rewarded had basically no real regulation from the government. I actually suspect that he's right. Cruz goes on to posit that Christianity ultimately wrapped itself full up in capitalism in the U.S. in the middle of the 20th century. He opens his book showing what was once the widespread anti-capitalistic outlook of Americans. And it's hard to believe, knowing where we are now, isn't it? I mean, very hard to believe. But at one point, that was the general outlook. Now, not so surprisingly, after the bleakness of the Great Depression, the average American actually harbored strong distrust and mistrust of capitalism. After all, the way most folks saw it, it was the greed and the pride and self-aggrandizing of wealthy capitalists. That was what got them where they were in the Great Depression. And at that point, because of all of that, the U.S. was actually ripe soil for the installment of some form of a democratic socialism where the playing field was more level and core values of loving your neighbor and helping those in need were more readily reflected and designed into the economic system. Now, knowing what you know now, you should not be surprised to learn that many of America's wealthy began to worry about some form of a populist movement popping up and ruining their great gig that they had going on. So, They look to their strongest resource, money, of course, and did what capitalists do very well. They bought an answer to their problem. In this case, the answer looked like a man by the name of Reverend James Feifel. He was a Congregationalist minister who in today's world would probably be thought of as a minister of the prosperity gospel. Basically, he was a Joel Osteen at the time. He made crazy amounts of money telling wealthy Christians that their wealth was proof of their virtue. God was rewarding them. God helps them to help themselves. Feifel was playing a key role, or he played a key role in combining Christian thought with emerging economic growth. And he started an organization called Spiritual Mobilization. And so, and in order to take that message to a larger population other than just his own wealthy congregation, he thought he needed to do that. The organization's goal was to destroy the growing Christian support for any kind of welfare state, to instead promote a new perspective of Christian libertarianism. That should sound like an oxymoron to everyone. Christian libertarianism. As opinion writer Elizabeth Bruning at the New York Times put it, quote, spiritual mobilization, the group that started, sought to influence ministers across the country. And with its bottomless monetary resources, it was doomed to success. Christianity was rented out quite consciously to bust a shambling narrative about the continued dominance of the moneyed class, performance that even Karl Marx would have found much. That is good writing, folks. That's good writing. She goes on to say, middle of the 20th century approached, again, organization, Spiritual Mobilization, they circulated literature touting the righteousness of a libertarian Christian gospel. Again, that makes no sense. And in 1951, decided to host a series of events celebrating the newly minted notion of freedom under God. A turn of phrase that turned. The rhetoric was a hit, and private companies were voracious about reproducing it. I'd also note right now that that was just only a few years before In God We Trust was added to our paper money. You better believe that was not a coincidence. One last thought from Elizabeth Bruning. She says, the stew of supply-side economics, small government, hardcore U.S. patriotism, and Christian rhetoric was entirely novel and smashingly effective. Personally, I only wish that it was still entirely novel because it sounds very much like the current aberration known as Christian nationalism. Ministerial proponents of this newly constructed ideology were manifold, powerful, and funded, and they ultimately opened the way for other pastors like Jerry Falwell and his Moral Majority Cohort to wax passionate about the gospel while raking in cash from committed capitalists delighted by the arranged merriment between God and mammon. Here's the thing, y'all. There is nothing Christian, nothing spiritually satisfying, nothing morally upright about that sordid relationship. It's uncaring, it's unbiblical, and it's inhumane, and it's killing creation. In his dictum entitled Evangelii Gaudium, for the joy of the gospel, Pope Francis puts it this way. We can no longer trust in the unseen forces of the invisible hand of the market. It goes on to call for redistribution of wealth and reform of economic structures that would ensure greater equality of income and opportunity. The rich, he says, should share their wealth, and calls for a new commandment that says this. Today, he said, we also have to say thou shalt not to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Confucius put it this way. The superior man understands what's right. The inferior man understands what will sell. The reality is that most, if not all, spiritual practices and teachings stand over and against systems that allow for a small group of people to hold a majority of the wealth while a majority of people suffer. You know, saw the opposite of that at the start of COVID as the government touted the importance of saving the economy, but not so much the people. That's the reality of free market capitalism or liberation capitalism, libertarian capitalism. Sadly, though, as Israeli historian Yuval Noah Harari says, the history of ethics is a sad tale of wonderful ideals that nobody can live up to. Most Christians do not imitate Christ. Most Buddhists fail to follow Buddha. And most Confucians would have caused Confucius a temper tantrum. In contrast, most people today successfully live up to the capitalist consumerist ideal. The new ethic promises paradise on the condition that the rich remain greedy and spend their time making more money, and that the masses give free rein to their cravings and possessions and buy more and more. This is the first religion in history whose followers actually do what they're asked to do. How, though, do we know that we're going to get paradise in return? It says, we've seen it on TV. Free market, unregulated capitalism is a spiritual crisis. Free market, unrelegated capitalism is a spiritual crisis. A spiritual crisis that Christian nationalism buys into his syndrome. Honestly, it should be of no surprise that we now print "In God We Trust" on our money, because it would seem that he is the only God in which we truly trust. Sadly, it's a blind and false trust, because the capitalism that it represents does not want the best for us, nor does it have aspirations to improve our lives spiritually or otherwise. The capitalism that it represents, the power it measures, the God it emulates, wishes nothing more than to create the God class. A class of society to which the rest of us are subservient and must obey. A ruling class who can afford to live outside of the destruction and ruin that they are creating, while the rest of us toil amidst muck and false belief that things will get better. And folks, that's not a dystopian view of the future. That's an open-eyed reading of most of the world's current reality. And there's nothing good or kind or loving or spiritual about it. You see, while market capitalism has generated incredible wealth for the tiny portion of the world's population, it has taken an already devastating toil on the planet, and it has failed to improve the well-being of the mass majority of humanity. If anything, it's done the opposite for most. We must remember that a primary issue at the heart of the crisis of climate change is the very way in which we produce things globally. And that it is tied deeply into the core values of capitalism from which its profit comes out of. A profit that is more concerned with profit sustainability. As long as we choose to continue operating out of this myopic understanding of economics, the crisis will continue. And given its progressive nature, it will only get worse. In a paper for the UN's 2019 Global Sustainable Development Report, I'm going to try to say that again, the UN's Global Sustainable Development Report, scientists actually argue that worsening climate change is having a drastic impact on economic systems and biodiversity. And that symptoms of unchecked capitalism like rising inequality, unemployment, and debt are also contributing to the destabilization of society. And in order to guarantee that humanity is able to have a good quality of life on Earth for future generations, the paper's authors, they argue that new economic systems will have to be created rather than the standard band-aid approach governments have taken in the recent past. To put it plainly, in these experts' opinion, capitalism is at fault. Spiritually minded people, particularly those claiming to be Christian, should be at the forefront of this effort to impact this necessity and necessary change without it, creation is lost. As I said, capitalism is a spiritual crisis. Does what we claim with the way we lead our lives, what we claim with the way we lead our lives, match with what we say matters to us spiritually? It's the way we lead our life, match to what we say matters to us spiritually. Now, we don't need to beat ourselves up too badly because of our answer to that question. The reality is that in today's world, particularly living under the constant impact of free market capitalism in the U.S., the reality is any American who is even being halfway honest with themselves has to answer that question. No, it doesn't. It's almost impossible. The reality is that no matter how much we want to have our spiritual confessions match our life's actions, the only way to exist and participate in a consumer-oriented society is to not always live into our spiritual confessions and expectations. Which is exactly why we must work for change. We must work for a society that's structured in a way that promotes our ability to care for all people. A society that enables us to lift up the founding concept that all are equally created and should be treated that way. A society that values sustainability, not just the resources, but of humanity over profit. Because the way our nation is structured will necessarily be seen as a political pursuit. Trust me, Christian nationalists already understand that. Just as Christianity was used, as I've talked about, in the early stages of embedding capitalism as a god in the U.S., we must use spirituality, morality, and our humanity change our nation's economic practices towards the health, well-being, and the equal inclusion of all people. It means becoming more active in the political process. It means being more vocal about systems that will sustain creation and sustain life. It means being willing to engage in non-violent civil disobedience when unjust laws are being promoted. Means actively divesting from stocks that promote division, mass consumption, and inequality. It means actively supporting companies who promote fair wages, civil rights, and it also means actively avoiding those who don't. The list could go on and on of what it means. And then there's no way that any of us could do all of them. But all of us can do some of them. But the one thing that we all can do, the one thing that we all must do, and you've heard this from me before, is vote. That is currently our real path to change. It begins locally and then extends nationally. That's where this change we need begins. It begins with an educated populace showing up at the polls and voting for sustainability, voting for the welfare of all people, voting for basic human rights, equality, and dignity. Voting for a system that values creation and all of humanity, which depends on it. Dave, I'm going to ask you if we could use some of your music to relax a little bit. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Mark. My weather app had told me that a storm was coming a couple Saturdays ago. It was a big thing. Winds were going to be 80 miles an hour, all that kind of stuff. So I waited for the storm to come. I wrote that storm. And when it finished, the storm had to be lied to me, believe it or not. Hard to believe. Can't believe anything you see on your phone these days. This is called a dream mark.
Many of you know, or some of you know at least, that I've been working on my doctorate. Within the next 2 weeks, a book entitled "Progressive Prayers for Progressive People" will come out, and it'll be the end of my doctorate. So that will be happening soon. And so I wanted to share one of the prayers with you from that book. This one's on being called to justice. Love is always present and all-embracing. Justice, faithfulness, love of peace, and reconciliation reaches out to all. We know that love does not forget those who are marginalized, oppressed, and afflicted. But we acknowledge that we sometimes do. Learn to more fully express love by bringing hope and reconciliation. May we be motivated by an unconditional love to stand with those at the margins of society so that they know justice. Let us realize that although we may have all come here on different ships, we are in the same boat now. May we see that we are inextricably and beautifully connected. May we extend our hospitality to those in need. When in our humanness, we neglect the ministries of love, peace, and justice. May we be propelled into instruments of love's reconciliation and equality. Let us help each other to work to alleviate the circumstances that cause the oppressive conditions in our world. May we understand that our connectedness, that in our connectedness, we are called to be each other's keepers. And may we live into that call with all that we have and all that we are. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other, recognizing that we are connected. We are one in creation. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life, and may your words and actions share that love and happiness with all the people you meet.